with you, and good to have folks joining us online. There are not many of us out here tonight. The snow, I think, has scared some folks away, but we're here tonight to enjoy some time together. I ran across an interesting suggestion. The suggestion was that this text that we'll be looking at tonight could well be, entitled The Ballad of Eunice and Cindy. Now, they changed the names. You know the story, if you watch much television, there was always this line, the names have been changed to protect the innocent, long, long ago. And perhaps that's the case. I want you to imagine these two ladies have gathered for church on Sunday morning. And there are other folks surrounding them, and they've gathered for church, and they've sung the songs that they always sing at the beginning. They've had prayers. Everything is going just as normal. It's time for the preacher to get up and to deliver his sermon. But instead of delivering the sermon, he said, "We got a letter this week from the fellow who planted this church long, long ago. And I want to read some of that letter to you." And so he begins by reading that letter. In the letter, he will quote a song, and the song is about Jesus and how important he is and how important the cross of Jesus is. He'll talk about that. He will greet the congregation, the elders and the deacons, and then he sort of changes midstream. He's given all of this interesting introduction where he talks about some doctrinal and theological issues, and then all of a sudden, he makes it personal. He gets personal. And the minister reads these words. "Now I beg Eunice and I beg Cindy to stop their quarreling. Make up and come to an understanding. I urge the rest of you to help them stop." Now can you imagine the red faces on those ladies? I mean, you're two of those ladies sitting there and you're hearing that language and you hear him say that about you. Oh my goodness. I think it would be quite striking to say the least. Our text is an interesting one. It begins, "I urge you, Euodia and Syntyche, to live in harmony in the Lord." Now, those two ladies are interesting sisters in the church. He sort of has already told them that they need to have the same mind. They need to strive together. That's the way he introduces this book. And then he starts out, "I exhort you," or "I urge you." And he even says it twice, "I urge you" twice, or "I exhort you" twice. He's calling them to proper behavior. And it's really unquestionably a very straightforward rebuke. And the two sisters are sitting there. I think Paul recognizes those two sisters, and he knows that they'll be able to take it. You know, they're tough folks. And they're going to be able to take the rebuke that he is. I'm sure they're sitting on opposite sides of the congregation when they're meeting. You know, they're not going to sit close to one another because they have some differences of some sort. And it's a rather direct appeal. The directness and openness, I think, affirms Paul's relationship with this church and how well he knows these people. He has faith in them. And so you don't take that kind of thing with a risk without knowing that. The two sisters are mature enough to handle the rebuke. And so he begins with this rebuke. And so I think it's really quite striking. Most tend to see these two ladies as troublemakers in the church. I don't think that's the case. I have a suspicion that there are two sisters in the church who just can't get along. Isn't that interesting? What their quarrel is, we don't know. I don't think it's doctrinal. Paul doesn't make any big deal about them believing the wrong thing or teaching the wrong thing. I have a feeling that they have some kind of dispute that is a problem, and it's probably minimal, maybe even insignificant. I don't know how many times in churches where I have worshiped and worked, I have seen those kind of quarrels go on where folks just can't. Somebody's doing too much and somebody's not doing enough, and the kind of arguments are there, and they're sometimes quite striking. Back in 1997, I went to the Pepperdine Lectures, and the preacher who was talking about this text said he was convinced that they had a difference in songs. Euodia wanted contemporary hymns. And Syntyche only wanted to sing songs where the folks who wrote them had been dead for 20 years. And that could well be. But again, it's that kind of difference. Their names are really quite striking. Euodia means literally a good way, a good path. And Syntyche is a word that either means good luck or maybe favorable. So they have nice names, and they're two sisters in the church. They are folks that he deems to be really important, really significant. And so he makes a big deal of it as he goes through. He calls them to live in harmony. And the word there that's translated live in harmony is literally to be of the same mind, to think the same thing, be of the same mind. And so I think that's really quite striking. He goes on to say, indeed, true companion. Now, we don't know who this true companion is. There are some who think it's Epaphroditus. He's the guy who brought the letter to him from the church in Philippi, and he's the one who's going to be delivering this letter back to them again, and he's going to talk about him and perhaps call him true companion. Others think he's one of Paul's brothers. He's Paul's brother. Paul has a brother, and he's this companion. Others have suggested that he is a man whose name is Syzykos, which is this word, Greek word, it made into a name. But it's really just somebody in the church. And he's somebody that Paul feels close to. Indeed, true companion, I ask you also to help these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel. Do you notice he talks about these two sisters as folks who have shared his struggle? Sounds like they're good ladies, right? They're upstanding members of the church. They are good members, but they somehow are having this disagreement. And so he's enlisting the help of this true companion, whoever this person is, together with Clement, another fella in the church there. And again, we don't have any idea who this Clement is. But this true companion and Clement are supposed to help them. Also, the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. An interesting way to talk about the other Christians in the church there. Their names are in the book of life. And so he's basically calling upon them to assist these two sisters in getting over whatever is troubling them. I think there's a call for us sometimes to do that. We need folks who are able to help folks get through disputes and to come to solve those kind of problems. But again, it's a striking call, I think, and it's one that is so striking. The discord, I think, is not just personal. It is somehow affecting the church. There's a corporate responsibility that the church members and those who are present have to help them get through this and get over it. You can't be discouraged by thinking you're meddling, because you're not meddling. You're trying to help folks get over a problem. And so that becomes important. It's there that he changes and comes back to the theme of the book. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. He's here calling them to have this joyful and gentle spirit that will make the difference. Put aside anxiety. And he's even going to call them to put aside that anxiety by praying. It's quite striking. There are some circumstances this church is facing. First of all, there's the thrust of some opponents there, and they could be causing them some stir. And then there's their concern for Paul, who's off under house arrest in Rome. And then there is the divisions that the church itself is facing. That's a recurring theme, by the way, in the book. I began our study in Philippians by talking about that and taking you through several passages where he will say, think the same things, be of the same mind, over and over again. This church is a grand church. It's a noble church, but they've got some squabbles. And these two sisters may be part of the squabble. And he really wants them to help solve it. So I entitled our lesson, Dealing with Discord, because even in a church our size, we have a bit of discord at times. And there's a responsibility that we have to help folks get over that. It's not easy, but it's a real responsibility and a very serious one. He begins with this rejoice. They can't let Paul's situation and the problems they're facing eclipse their joy. Joy is one of the major themes for those of us who are Christians. Christians should experience joy always because of who we are and what God's done for us. What a wonderful thing it is. And notice he emphasizes it. Rejoice in the Lord always. Don't ever let it get you down. keep on believing, keep on being faithful. It's like saying, how can we rejoice with the current circumstances? You can if you know what matters. And so that's that call, to know what matters. He continues by saying, let your gentle spirit be known to all men. And I like that, let your gentle spirit. Some have suggested we might translate it forbearing spirit. It means cutting folks some slack. Now, that's not easy to do. You know, if folks disagree with you, it's hard to cut them slack, you know. After all, they're wrong and I'm right and I'm not going to cut them any slack. But it really is cut them some slack. Let your gentle spirit, your forbearing spirit be known to all men. And then he goes on to say, why? Because the Lord is near. Now, that might be saying the Lord could come back any time and you need to be prepared for his return. It might be more than that, though. I'm wondering if he's not saying he's near at all times for those of us who are believers. Jesus is around us. When we're gathered here on Sunday, he's with us. If there are only a handful of us here, Jesus is in our midst. Isn't that striking? The Lord is near. Don't get down and don't get discouraged. Help folks get through problems. Be there and be the kind of people you ought to be. The Lord is near. And then he goes on to emphasize the need for prayer. Be anxious for nothing. Don't worry about things. Let things get them out of the way. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. By the way, do you notice he uses four different words for prayer? He begins with prayer. That's the generic word for prayer. And then he has supplication. It's a word that is really making a request to somebody who is higher than you. And so it's making this request of God, who is higher than we are, greater than we are, bigger than we can imagine. And then he goes on to say, with thanksgiving. That's the word, by the way, that we get Eucharist from. It was really interesting. My wife and I were walking along the beach in Athens, Greece. We were walking along the beach picking up shells. That's what Jenny likes to do. She doesn't want to get in the water necessarily. She just likes to walk along the shore and pick up shells. And so she was picking up shells as we walked along, and there was an older lady sitting there. She had a lawn chair and was sitting there relaxing. And she called Jenny over, and she gave her a box with really nice, pretty shells in it. We weren't finding any nice big shells, but she'd found some really pretty ones, and she gave them to Jenny. And Jenny said, Evcharisto, that's that Greek word that we have here, thank you. And she just thought it was the most wonderful thing in the world that she was speaking her language. That was the only word Jenny knew how to say in Greek, but it was an important word, thank you. But that kind of thanksgiving that we have to God, it's what we do at Thanksgiving time. We sometimes will go around the room and say, what are you thankful for? Just have everybody say something they're thankful for. And that's worth doing, but we really ought to be thanking God at all times. And then there's that last word, requests. A request. Now, there are four different words, prayer, supplication, thanksgiving, request. All of those are four different words for prayer. Now, I don't think he's trying to necessarily tell you four different kinds of prayer. I think he's just trying to make sure he covers all the bases. It's really probably a rhetorical device, a stylistic device, to make sure that he gets across this point. I want you to be praying, folks. And we don't pray enough. We simply don't pray enough. We don't pray enough as a church. We don't pray enough as individuals. We need to spend time in prayer. It's who we are. It's what makes us who we are. And it's the one way that we can avoid anxiety. You're going to be anxious about everything, not anxious about nothing, but anxious about everything if you're not prayerful and putting things before God and letting Him deal with those problems. But again, it's striking language. And then he ends with this phrase, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Now, I don't know that I'm going to do it or not. Maybe I should make you sing it. There's a song we sometimes sing, the peace that has that line, the peace that passes understanding. I have a joy, 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 joy down in my heart, down in my heart, down in my heart. Then it goes on. The next line is something like, I'm so happy, so very happy, down in my heart, down in my heart. Then it is, I have the love of Jesus down in my heart. And then it is, I have the peace that passes understanding down in my heart, down in my heart, down in my heart. The peace that passes understanding. Our kids sing that song. We teach it to them very young to help them understand this. We have this peace that the world around us just can't understand and appreciate. Isn't that grand? It's something very special for us. It is a peace that surpasses all comprehension. And it will guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. It's what's going to keep us safe. And so it's this real call, I think. Let the joy take the place of anxiety and discouragement. Pray, yield up your own rights, look to the needs of others, and pray to God, and it'll make the difference. A church that's facing discord needs to do all of those things. And the discord will go by the way, and the anxiety will disappear. That's who we are as a people of God. We're going to sing a song as an invitation song, and if you need to respond to that invitation in any way, we'd be happy to assist you in doing that this evening. Let's sort of stand as we sing this song as we close.